we see that Black women are being offered abortion as a solution to their problem of maternal mortality, which is on so many levels just an awful thing to do.
Welcome to Straight Talk on Life Issues. My name is Victor Nieves. I'm joined by Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute, for a very special program. Today, we're going to be talking about a debate that actually, Brad, I won't lie, has kind of bewildered me because it's always sort of felt like a silly question, but folks will say that abortion is safer than childbirth. That's what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, it's a lie that is repeated over and over and over again, just as a way to promote abortion on demand, Victor. It is one of the most irresponsible things we're hearing from all of levels of government, from medical professionals who know better, even from U.S. Supreme Court justices, if you can imagine that. In the dissenting opinion on Dobbs, they repeated multiple times in their opinion that abortion is safer than giving birth to children. And that is an outright lie.
Well, it just, at face value, maybe this isn't the way that they mean it, but it's obviously not true, because a successful quote unquote abortion always kills somebody. That doesn't sound very safe to me in any way. How can they even come up with something like that?
Yeah, well, don't they just conveniently forget some of the victims? Plus, they don't talk about the dangers to women, both physically and emotionally. It is just being brushed under the rug for the sake of an extreme agenda.
Yeah, well, I mean, that reminds me, talk about brushed under the rug. This is something that you had mentioned, I don't know, it may have been in a latest post not long ago, but the number of these abortion clinics that are sending women to the hospital, where they tell them that it's safe, and, you know, and over and over and over, they have these medical emergencies where women are dying. I mean, we hear about it all the time, these horrible late-term abortion doctors, if they can even be called that, these people, and they kill women, or they send them to the hospital. That's not safe.
Well, you know, not only that, but with chemical abortion pills, the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, since 2015, has been hiding adverse reactions from the pills. They only report something if the woman dies. So say if a woman spends 11 weeks in the hospital with sepsis, she has to have a hysterectomy to save her life, takes pints of blood. None of that matters unless she dies.
Wow. And they just ignore it. They pretend that it never happened. And what is it that they say all the time, that it's safer than Tylenol?
Right. Yeah. So much for pro-choice, pro-woman. And this is coming from people in medical communities and political realms, and they know better. And it is not pro-choice. It is not pro-woman. And certainly it is not pro-child. They only care about their agenda of radicalizing the abortion laws throughout the United States of America.
Yes, they do. And making a whole lot of money while they do that. But of course, we're going to talk about this in much greater detail with our fantastic guests that we have. Once again, we're joined by Dr. Ingrid Skop, Vice President and Director of Medical Affairs for the Charlotte Lozier Institute, over 25 years of experience as a practicing obstetrician gynecologist with an extensive amount of research on maternal mortality, abortion, women's health, and et cetera. Quite the resource to have joining us. Another fantastic guest and excellent resource, Dr. Tara Sander Lee, Vice President and Director of Life Sciences at the Charlotte Lozier Institute. She's been published in multiple medical journals, textbooks, et cetera. Again, very much knows what she's talking about. And finally, we have with us Dr. James Studnicki, the Vice President and Director of Data Analytics at the Charlotte Lozier Institute. Dr. Studnicki's research is focused on the use of large-scale databases, associated information technology, and analyzing outcomes at the patient, hospital, and community levels. It's safe to say that our guests today really know what they're talking about.
Well, that would be an understatement, certainly. These people are individuals that I'm familiar with and know fairly well and have the highest respect for. And when they talk, people listen. So during this podcast, they're going to be sharing some crucial information.
That they are. Let's jump into it, Brad.
Let's do it. There's a study I want to ask you about because this finding in the study was repeated by Supreme Court justices in their dissenting opinion on Dobbs. And the study concluded, and I quote, "Legal induced abortion is markedly safer than childbirth. The risk of death associated with childbirth is approximately 14 times higher than that with abortion." Did the members of the Supreme Court get this right?
No, they didn't get it right. They got it wrong. Scores and scores of media and academicians and public officials and others have gotten this study wrong for the 11 years that it's been around. And it was published in 2012. It's been debunked a number of times as well.
What's wrong with it?
There are many things wrong with it, but I put them in two major categories. One is the issue of whether or not the actual comparison itself ought to be made, whether or not these two fractions, which are maternal deaths over 100,000 live births and abortion deaths over 100,000 abortion. There are many officials from the World Health Organization and also from the CDC. Julie Gerberding, who was the director of the CDC years ago, actually said that these two are so different conceptually that these two fractions should never be compared. If you just think about it for a moment, a woman who has a live birth is pregnant for 9 months, whereas a woman who has an induced abortion is pregnant for a much shorter period of time. So even if we were to risk adjust for the period of time spent in pregnancy, you can see obviously that these two are very, very different events. By the way, the two fractions that Raymond and Grimes came up with were 8.8 deaths per 1,000 live births and 0.6 deaths per 100,000 abortions. The other reason why this analysis is flawed is because abortion and abortion complications, including death, are dramatically underreported compared to births and birth deaths. We have a horrendously inadequate abortion reporting system in the United States. A good example of this is in one of our studies, we found out that in the emergency room, women who have chemical abortions are coming to the emergency room and they're telling the emergency room physician they're not revealing that they had a chemical abortion. And so they're being treated as and being coded, identified in the emergency room as someone who has a miscarriage.
Doctor, do you think that legal abortion is a factor in racial disparity where it's been observed in pregnancy-related mortality?
We know, for example, from the data that we have, that there's a racial disparity in terms of abortion rates, that African-American women have an abortion rate. It's been running around 3.5 times the white rate. I think fewer than half of African-American pregnancies end up as a live birth. So the number that actually end up as a live birth is much, much smaller for the African-American community than it is, for example, for the white community or for the Hispanic communities. And that, again, adds a certain element of variability and uncertainty into these fractions that make the comparison of these two fractions invalid.
Dr. Skop and Dr. Lee, I'd like to ask you this both to weigh in on this question. Dr. Skop, we'll start with you. How has the inconsistency in numbers, how has that hampered the efforts to improve women's health?
I think what you just discussed, the disparity in Black maternal mortality, which is quite high, but they also have a similarly high abortion rate. So abortion is not protecting them from maternal mortality. And there's many reasons I think that abortion contributes to their mortality. And mortality is quite complex. Most people think of this being a catastrophic event at the time of delivery, which is part of maternal mortality, but that's only about a quarter of the deaths. A full half of deaths occur between 1 week and 1 year after the end of pregnancy. Increasingly, we're seeing those are mental health deaths, and those are also women who perhaps have a medical emergency in the postpartum period, who don't have support from a partner to tell them to get medical help, to tell them to take care of their children and to transport them to an emergency room. And I think that contributes. We know that about two-thirds of Black women are having children outside of wedlock. They don't have supportive partners in many cases, and this has led men to be disenfranchised. And so that is undoubtedly contributing to maternal mortality. And additionally, the mental health consequences. We see that a woman is 2 to 4 times as likely to die in the year following an abortion from any cause related to giving birth to her child, but about 6 times as often will she die from a mental health complication, particularly suicide. And as we discussed about the data deficiencies, the CDC does not make much of an effort to detect those deaths.
Dr. Tara Lee, would you share your personal experience with us?
I've actually served as an appointed member of the U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services Advisory Committee on Infant and Maternal Mortality within the United States. And from day one, sitting in that meeting, because the CDC presents data on maternal mortality. And it became really clear from day one, it was obvious that there were serious flaws in the way the CDC continues to collect and analyze maternal mortality data in the US. They know that this is a flaw. They admit that their data is incomplete and that they fail to look at all maternal deaths in this country that do not result in a live birth. So like Dr. Skopf and Dr. Sinicki said, we're missing a large population of pregnant women that die as a result of miscarriage, stillbirth, or abortion. And so that this failure is going to lead to these large gaping holes in our understanding of a mother's true risk of dying during pregnancy. And so then that leads to then people like we've been saying, that if we don't have the complete data, then people can make these dishonest and scientifically inaccurate claims and make connections, any connections that they see between high maternal mortality rates and banned abortion. And so we hear these statements being made that, well, in these states that have these pro-life bans, that it is absolutely leading to higher maternal mortality. But then when you push the CDC on this and say, well, why are you not collecting all of this data? They will come back and they will say, well, it's just not feasible. And I can tell you in our committee, you know, we've tried to put forward this data, the hardcore data showing in other countries that there is a direct association between abortion and maternal mortality, and that their assessment of this is flawed, and they just don't want to hear anything of it. And I just find it so ironic that they continue to push, even in this committee, they think that one of the ways to decrease maternal mortality is to have increased access to abortion.
Boy, you've got a bird's eye view into the problems with collecting that information. And as Dr. Studnicki said, they know it's wrong, but it serves an agenda to put that information forth. Is there any optimism by any of you three that proper information can and will be collected?
I'm quite optimistic. They published studies trying to compare maternal mortality and abortion restrictions, but we all recognize the abortion restrictions, no meaningful restrictions occurred until the wake of the Dobbs decision just last year. And the maternal mortality data they're comparing it to is from 4 and 5 years ago. I think that not having abortion available as an alternative, we know from international studies, will change people's behavior. We're going to be protecting women from the increased risk of death, as I mentioned earlier, that occurs in the year following an abortion, all causes as well as mental health causes. But there's something specific about abortion that can raise a risk that a lot of people are not discussing. One is that in our country, we have a lot of late abortions. So about 10% of abortions occur after the first trimester when they need to be done by a dilation and evacuation procedure, which is much more dangerous. About 1% occur after the time of viability when a child can survive separated from his mother. The CDC's own data, again, it's limited, but what there is tells us that a woman is 15 times as likely to die from an early second trimester abortion. She is 76 times as likely to die from a late second trimester abortion compared to an early one. Additionally, there's future pregnancy complications that are associated with abortion. Cervical damage can result in preterm birth. So if we can prevent that from happening, we're going to save her from elevated risk of mortality. And additionally, almost all of the states that have abortion restrictions are also committing a lot of money toward alternatives to abortion funding, toward healthcare for women, toward support, emotional, material, financial support. We're going to be caring for our women better because of these abortion restrictions will enable us to come alongside women very early on to care for them in their pregnancies. And hopefully we'll be able to point out to the world, as we've seen in European countries, Poland, Malta, until recently Ireland, some of the countries in Europe that have the tightest abortion restrictions also have the lowest maternal mortality.
Dr. Lee, do you have anything to add?
I was just going to add that they're trying to save both lives, right? They're trying to help both the baby and as well as the mother. But even in these states that have these protections in place, there's still, every state has an exemption that allows abortion when necessary to save the life of a mother if her pregnancy poses a severe risk to her life.
Jim, did you have anything to add to that?
We're not too far from making science nearly impossible. If we don't do something very quickly about our ability to identify abortions when they occur and then to follow the women through some sort of a linkage with other registries, whether they're death certificates or healthcare utilization or whatever, until we have the kind of system that some of the Scandinavian countries have. You need good data to have good science, but you need good science to have good practice. Those talk about the quality of care being rendered. No quality of care person who would ever say that the best way to start with improving the quality of care is to eliminate all of the information that we have coming in about the possible incidents or negative consequences of what we're doing. But that's exactly what the abortion industry is doing.
And they benefit by not having that information available.
Absolutely.
Because it shows the horrid underbelly of the abortion industry. Dr. Scott, you did a study with Dr. Marmion that stated, and I quote, "Some healthcare professionals have suggested that the increase in maternal mortality is due to limiting women's access to abortion." What was the outcome of your study?
I like to use the analogy, this promotion of abortion, particularly there's a very eugenic, racist component to it, because we see that Black women are being offered abortion as a solution to their problem of maternal mortality, which is on so many levels just an awful thing to do. I mean, of course, it ignores the beauty that comes from the end of a successful pregnancy, which is a new human life. This is another interesting thing about the maternal mortality issue. Only a third of the deaths are the ones that we traditionally think of as being causes of maternal mortality: hemorrhage, sepsis, hypertensive crisis. Again, more and more are mental health crises, which we're seeing across our country. Dr. Studnicki just published a study looking at this data in a records linkage way that discovered that women after abortion had three times the risk of needing mental health services than the women who carried their children to term.
When the opposite is true, of course.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would say, you know, I've been a practicing obstetrician for 30 years. And so I know what maternal mortality looks like on the ground. And thank God I've never lost a patient to mortality in childbirth, but I did care for a woman who died from a second trimester abortion. One of my partners cared for a woman who died from a first trimester abortion. And I also had a patient who died when her partner killed her and then committed suicide. So a mental health death. So I've seen that this mortality is not what many Americans think it is. It's these other issues that abortion exacerbates.
The prevailing opinion is that abortion becomes more risky the farther along into pregnancy as it progresses. Do you have anything to add as to specifically why that is?
It's difficult to think about, but perhaps your listeners know what a D&E procedure is. This is the late-term abortion procedure of choice. I have never needed to do an abortion to save a patient's life or for any other reason. And yet I have done D&E procedures on late miscarriages. And it is one that I take very seriously. It is something that could easily result in complications. We see when we look at who's providing late-term abortions in our country, many times they're not the best quality physicians. Many of them are not obstetricians. They're family practitioners. There's a podiatrist doing this procedure. There's an ophthalmologist doing this procedure. They're doctors who go into late-term abortion provision as a career of last resort in many cases.
We often refer to those as the bottom feeders of the medical community.
Right. I mean, even look in the peer-reviewed literature, we see complication rates between 10 and 50%. And some of these are documented by pro-abortion advocates. But we also know that there is sort of a willingness of state health departments and others who should be supervising abortion providers to look the other way. We saw that clearly with Kermit Gosnell. An abortionist there almost killed three women, one woman a month for 3 months before the state finally intervened. As Dr. Studnicki mentioned, many times they don't make it to the death certificate. And without that notation on the death certificate, the CDC doesn't look at them.
Now, statements have been made by the abortion industry, the media, and others on the left that women's access to urgent medical procedures has been blocked by pro-life legislation. Dr. Lee, I'd like to hear from you if you think there's any truth to that matter.
It's absolutely a lie, because every state has an exemption allowing abortion when necessary to save the life of a mother if her pregnancy poses a severe risk to her life. And state laws specify that a physician may actually use reasonable medical judgment to determine if intervention is necessary in a medical emergency.
And if anybody would like additional information on our website at lifeissues.org, we have an article that has a link to the state laws pertaining to these medical emergencies in every single state. It spells out what those laws are. And as you said, every state is covered where women will receive this emergency care. Specifically, why do you think they're putting forth these lies?
More than 95% of abortions are for social and financial reasons, and that's very hard to justify. So in the wake of the Dobbs decision, the abortion industry has turned toward fear-mongering and trying to convince the American people that women will suffer because of these laws. Unfortunately, the medical organizations that should be explaining the new laws to physicians because of pro-abortion ideology have in many cases remained silent, and that has led to frustration among physicians on the ground. But again, as Tara said, usually you don't need to do an abortion, which is defined as intentionally killing the child. You know, in the rare event that a child needs to be separated from his mother, I can do this as an obstetrician by labor induction. Even if I know that the child is too young or too sick to survive, my intent was not to kill him. My intent is to protect his mother.
I'd like to go back to the Supreme Court statements in the dissenting opinion in the Dobbs case. What they stated was, quote, experts estimate that the ban on abortion increases maternal mortality by 21%, with white women facing a 13% increase in maternal mortality, while Black women face a 33% increase. I'd like you all to weigh in, if you're able, on that piece of their dissent.
If you look at the data, especially from other countries that have that the strong record linkage studies, it shows that abortion is far more dangerous and deadly than childbirth, and that it's going to increase maternal mortalities.
Jim, did you have anything to add to that?
Because we don't have good data set, a valid data set that's in the hands of investigators, whether the investigators are pro-life or pro-choice or neither. Good investigators, if they have access to valid data, will deal with these problems. There'll be a competition of ideas. There'll be a competition of analyses. And in that set of circumstances, science will develop results that are useful for public policy. Right now, we don't have that, which means that the liars, the cheaters, the fakes, and those who control the media have an opportunity to dominate the narrative.
Dr. Lee, does America have a maternal mortality problem?
Well, we do see that in comparison to other countries, we do see quite a significant increase in maternal mortality. There is definitely a racial component to it, that underrepresented minorities do face a higher incident of maternal mortality in this country. And it is very complicated. And the death of any woman, regardless of race, during pregnancy is deeply troubling. It is a serious issue. I think what's happening right now, though, is they are ignoring, in trying to solve this problem, they're strictly looking at like social determinants of health. But I think that the way that they're looking at this problem is by only looking at it from a social determinants of health issue. And they're ignoring some of the real hardcore science that is suggesting that there are some real problems, for example, like with abortion, and that could be contributing to maternal mortality.
There are a half a dozen states out of 50 where we can do any kind of meaningful analysis that have more than a dozen maternal deaths in a year. Most of the states, 35, 40 of the states in the United States, have a handful. And when I say handful, I say, look at my hand, five fingers, five or fewer. maternal deaths in the state, 35, 40 states. So what are we talking about? How we can compare the role people talking about, the role that state policies are kind of having on maternal mortality and all of that. Anything you do at the state level in the United States, especially with abortion, you have this tremendously skewed distribution.
We've talked about the ramifications of legally induced abortion, but as we know, even before the Dobbs decision, the abortion industry and its supporters promoted and even facilitated illegal abortions. Dr. Scott, what do you think will be the impact on women's health and lives with this illegal abortion network?
I mean, it's going to be a problem. I'm happy that the Fifth Circuit is trying to put some guardrails back on chemical abortion, because a couple of things that have been happening. The FDA made the decision to take away all the in-person supervision. And of course, chemical abortions are more than half of the abortions in our country. So higher failures because maybe she underestimates her gestational age, missed opportunities to diagnose ectopic pregnancies. These pills do not work on an ectopic pregnancy, and a woman is 30% more likely to die from a ruptured ectopic pregnancy while she's undergoing a chemical abortion because the pain and bleeding she thinks are signs it's working rather than a sign her life is in danger. That's going to increase if we don't get some guardrails put back on. 2% of pregnancies are ectopic. The opportunity to do labs to prevent future pregnancy complications with Rogam, and the opportunity to discover, does the woman want an abortion? We know that sex traffickers, incestuous abusers, and other coercive men are going to utilize this lax supervision to provide unwanted abortions. And looking at good quality data, unwanted abortions lead to mental health complications and suicides.
I would like to thank you all for being part of this program. You have brought us a wealth of information, and we deeply appreciate it.
Thank you so much for the invitation,
Brad. Great to be here.
Well, Brad, I think it's safe to say that we have answered the question of the day as to whether or not abortion, it sounds crazy even saying it, whether or not abortion is as safe as Tylenol or chemical abortion is safe, or of course, whether or not abortion is somehow safer than childbirth. We can give that one a big, fat, resounding no, absolutely not. Our experts, the research, everything is rather conclusive here. We know the answer to that question. A special thank you to our guests for coming on and talking about this with us. It's just crazy, Brad. I really do. I have a hard time believing that anyone would actually say such a thing.
Yeah, you know, and if those fact checkers want to save a shred of credibility, they'd weigh in on this because the evidence is there, and they would tell those individuals that no, they are peddling lies at the cost of lives of women and their babies.
That they are, absolutely. Well, I want to encourage everybody, make sure you make use of the resources that we have compiled on lifeissues.org. We have a free downloadable document which provides to you the key points. You know, when you're engaged in this conversation with other people, you'll have all of the resources that you need available right at your fingertips on lifeissues.org. I want to encourage you, by the way, to follow us on all of our social medias at Life Issues Institute. Again, we post very up-to-date stuff and relevant resources, things that you can share with your friends and with your family. I also want to thank everyone who makes this podcast possible through your generous and tax-deductible donations. Without you, this wouldn't be possible. So we greatly, greatly appreciate you. As always, we'd love to hear from you. Let us know your thoughts. Again, go to lifeissues.org and be sure to tune in next week for more Straight Talk on Life Issues.